Chris and Chris Talk Movies.
Hello and welcome back to the podcast. My name is Chris Ferry, and of course, this is my co-host.
My name is Chris Huddleston.
And today, we are both very excited to be talking to you about the brand new David Fincher film on Netflix right now, The Killer. You have a synopsis for us, Mr. Huddleston.
I do. This is a very short one from Rotten Tomatoes. And as always, we spoil these. This movie's been out for less than a week. So if you have Netflix, it's there for you to watch. This is a film directed by David Fincher. It stars Michael Fassbender, Charles Parnell, Tilda Swinton, some other people, and the short but sweet synopsis on Rotten Tomatoes is, after a fateful near miss, an assassin battles his employers and himself on an international manhunt he insists isn't personal. So this was obviously, this is brand new. So this is a first time watch for both of us. What did you think?
I didn't love it. I thought it was very stylish. I thought it was very ably handled. I'm a big Fassbender. You know, Tilda Swinton, great. She's great. I mean, you know, this isn't inexpensively done. It looks fantastic. I think the material. What was the budget?
$175 million.
Holy, really?
That's what IMDb says. I don't know where the. I mean, it. Not that it. But it's like, they must have been just like, hey, let's, I think that's just Netflix throwing money around, I guess. I don't know where, you
I
know,
think
this
so
could have been
too,
a $50 million movie, you know?
Oh my God. Less. It could have been less. I mean, at $50 million, you're paying A-list actors these days, you know? But mostly, like, I'm not going to say it sucked because it didn't. I read, like, on Rotten Tomatoes, one of the reviews is the review generally good for this. And one of
86% the, you know, right says, now on Rotten Tomatoes.
Fans of Fincher will like it. I think that's accurate. Some people might find it a little pretentious. And I think that chimed with me. I thought, you know, I did a little Wikipedia-ing. It looks like this script was written based on a series of French graphic novels called The Killer or something like that. I don't know anything about the source material.
No, me neither.
But the fact that it comes from graphic novel maybe explains it. Maybe that it's French explains it a little bit. But to me, there was just nobody in this movie. It was interesting as Fassbender doesn't say 20 words. Like, and yet he's constantly talking. Like, there's this running voiceover, you know, I guess monologue in his head that we are subjected to. And a lot of it is repetitive. He has a mantra that he does that is a long mantra of, like, don't do this, don't have empathy, right? But his character on screen doesn't say anything. Nobody else in this movie can shut the F up. Like, he goes to his boss and his boss doesn't shut up. And, you know, the boss's secretary is so scared she's quiet. But then he finds Tilda Swinton and she goes on this long blah, 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 where she's like philosophizing about what they do on the iPhone the first time. And like, shut up, you know? It just really got under my skin. I feel like if you gave me a red pencil and I can do an edit of this where I cut 80% of the dialogue, it would be a much more compelling film.
Because it looks great. It's great. It's beautifully shot.
I think the action, there's a fight sequence in it that it's a really well choreographed fight sequence. And it just goes on and on. And I had the thought, I'm like, this is a comic book fight sequence. Like, not even two professional killers could slam each other's heads into walls. And keep getting back up. Like,
and Fincher walks up, really? Not Fincher, but Fassbender walks away from it. And right. I was talking to somebody else today who had seen the movie, and we were just, you know, this is where you get into movie suspension of disbelief. But I was saying, you know, the thing in movies where if somebody came up to you and kicked you in the face once, you probably would get up, you know, and this is, and right. It's like he walks away from it and does not have to go to the hospital, you know?
Right. And, you know, so there's a part of me that's kind of like, okay, so is this John Wick? Is that what we're doing here? Because the movie doesn't present itself like it's John Wick. The movie presents itself very, very stylish, very deliberately and self-consciously stylish, you know, from the wardrobe to the locations, to the way that it's shot, to the way it's lit. And I think it's very handsome looking. You know, John Wick, and my apologies to the John Wick fans out there. They're just stupid movies. I mean, yeah. They're just, and to the all the way down to this underground enclave of assassins that have their own. Give me a break. Talk about a graphic novel kind of movie, but they go all in on that. You know, they go all in on the neon lighting and the badassery and the, like, this guy's unkillable and everybody's scared to death of him. In this movie, the whole thing is predicated. It really reminded me like 3 Days of the Condor or something. You're really following this hard-boiled killer. And I think it's interesting to get inside that person's mind a little bit. And I think it's interesting to see that Tilda Swinton's character brings it up. She's like, you know, and you missed? Like, that's not that hard a shot, you know, and you, like, what's going on there? What's happening? Something's cracking inside of you, isn't it? And we realize throughout the movie that it is, that he's wrestling with, you know, for all the talking, he doesn't really get into what's going on, but something is slipping. And I think all of that's interesting. I just think I feel like the way that it was handled came off as a little pretentious, and it came off as a little style over substance. What did you think?
Yeah, so I'm going to say maybe that I probably liked it a little bit more than you, but I definitely hear some of your criticisms. I felt like this movie, have you ever seen the George Clooney movie from 2010, The American?
Yeah.
I felt like this does what this the American does what this movie is doing better, I felt. And I don't know that, you know, we're here to review The Killer and not The American. But The American, I thought, was a really interesting movie at the time, because I felt like it was sort of the anti-James Bond, where it's like being an assassin, there would be nothing fun about it. It would not be exciting. And the killer gets into that a lot, but what the American, I think, really focuses on is that how horrible it would be to be that person, because you could never have a relationship. You could never have a family, because they'd get killed at some point. And this movie delves into this a little bit, but it really gets into the boredom of it. You know, there's a lot of that where he's talking about it, a lot of it, you're just sitting around, you know. And I kind of lost my train of thought, but I don't know. I don't know where I was going with that. But go ahead. What were you going to say?
No, I really enjoyed The American.
fun to do maybe sometime because I like that movie a lot.
Yeah,
that was a much more artsy version of this as well. Oh, I remember what I was going to say. This is not, except for that scene, that fight scene, this is not really an action movie.
No.
It's more of a thriller, but a lot of it is just, you know, him hiding out and going around and evading detection and all of that. I thought some of that, I enjoyed some of that. I saw I read a lot of comments on Twitter about this, and people talked about how funny this movie is, which I was like, I didn't really, I mean, there are humorous things in it. One thing that did make me laugh a little bit is his aliases are all sitcom characters. Like it's Oscar Felix and I forget what the other ones are, but all of it, you know, they'll show his credit card or his passport or whatever. He also, while he's doing his hits, he listens to the Smiths, and throughout the movie, he listens, you know, when he's traveling and everything, he listens to the Smiths. And I watched a long interview, the director, Rian Johnson, interviewing Fincher and Michael Fassbender. And he asked him about, you know, how did you land on the Smiths as the music? And he said, you know, they tried a lot of different things. They tried Mozart. They tried Joy Division, you know, all these different music. And he thought it was really funny that they picked the Smiths. And I didn't really think that was funny. I mean, did you think this movie was funny?
No.
I mean, other than those names, you know, I didn't find it a funny, it's not a black comedy to me in any way. I mean, it's a dark movie.
And I think that kind of goes into the sense of pretentiousness to me. Mm-hmm. Like, is this that they don't think that kids today are going to recognize the music? Or, you know, the whole tone, Meet His Murder, is this, you know, I mean, it just doesn't jive with the professional killer could listen to whatever he wants. I think him listening to one Smith song is kind of a fun, clever choice in that moment, but it's like it's the only cassette he owns, you know, it's like the whole soundtrack. And so I don't know why you keep coming back to it. Like, what point are you trying to make? It felt like they spent $150 million on a movie that could have made for 40, you know, and they all just kind of got up their own ass a little bit. Like, oh, this would be great. It'll be, you'll only listen to the Smiths. Yeah. That'll be great. You know? I don't know.
I like the Smiths, but nobody listens to just one band all the time.
No, it doesn't make any sense in the universe of the movie. And at one point he's sort of dressed like a German tourist, and that's a little bit funny, but it's also, he looks very much the part. Like he looks in Paris, he looks like the kind of person that, you know, a Parisian would look away from, you know, that he makes this comment. And then, but later in the movie, he's dressed very stylishly in a way that I think would draw the eye. And that felt a little incongruous to me. Like, wouldn't one of these guys, Michael Fassbender's a perfectly symmetrical dude, right? Mm-hmm. He's just a good looking person. Part of why he's an A-list actor. For this movie, he looks almost, he's gaunt. He looks almost sepulchral. Like his eyes are sunken. He has this
so
haunted look.
Thin.
And I think that's an interesting choice. I don't know. It doesn't seem tied to anything. I mean, it almost just feels like the actor was like, okay, they're going to pay me a lot of money to do this, and the script is kind of wah, 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 wah. So I got to, like, you know, come up with something challenging for myself here, and I'll suck a bunch of weight. Or maybe he's getting ready for another part. It didn't seem tied to this movie in particular.
I kind of took that as he's so a big, I guess, I don't know if it's you'd call it a theme, but a big aspect of the movie is, and he tells you all of this with his voiceover, is he's so disciplined, and it's all of the things that he does to remain disciplined and non-emotional and detached and all of this. And I think it's, I think, and maybe there was some reference to this in, about heart disease or something like that, but it's like he does yoga throughout, and it's probably, you know, being this level of fitness that he is, you know, he's not going to have heart disease or whatever that could get in the way of, you know, him being calm to do these hits and all of that. And he eats McDonald's Egg McMuffins all the time. And he takes the bread off to eat just the meat and the egg because it's a certain amount of protein and all of that. And
I think, he explains, you know, it's a great way to get 100 grams of protein for 1 pound British sterling.
Right.
Right. And I had the thought, who is he talking to? Is this just an inner monologue running? Like he's talking to us.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Like now he's explaining, and it's not that there's a wrong way to do voiceover in a movie, whatever. But I mean, at other places, it's like when he's doing his mantra, it's something, it's a calming exercise. It's a way of keeping himself on the rails. But at other times he's talking to us like, hey, folks, going to cross the street now. And it's almost like a YouTuber or something being like, now you gotta be real careful with these long shots because the wind, you know, you don't have to worry too much at this distance about wind, whatever. But, you know, yeah. And I just was, I don't know. I didn't have a problem finishing this movie. Again, it's ably done and it's well directed, and I like the stars in it. But there's just something about the script, the content itself, that I found a little off-putting.
Mm. I think to me what the movie was trying to say. So to kind of fill the viewer or the listener in, if you haven't seen the movie, so he is. When the movie starts, I mean, and it's a pretty long opening of he's in Paris and, you know, he's
pretty long movie for what it is. Pretty,
like 2 hours, you know,
and he's waiting. It could be a tight hour 20, this movie.
He's waiting to do a hit. And, you know, one we never learn in this movie are the people that it seems like it's just corporations basically that are paying for these, you know, because he we don't know if the people are bad, if they're, you know, murderers or rapists or whatever that he's killing, you know. But he is, so he's holed up in Paris, you know, for several days waiting to kill this guy, and the guy has, you know, presumably a prostitute that comes to his apartment that he's in or whatever. And Michael Fassbender's character screws up and shoots the woman instead of the man. So then
he's waiting for a clear shot.
Right.
And she sort of steps in front of, does she stumble? There's just, it's not super clear. Yeah. Maybe I blinked, but he clips her and wings the guy, but it certainly doesn't kill him.
But so then he becomes expendable and his employers are then after him. But like I say, we never find out anything about the people that he kills, you know, what the, you know, who they are or whatever. And throughout the movie, it's all about that he has to stay calm and unemotional and all of this. And then he has a hideout in the Dominican Republic, I think it is. And he goes back there and he has a girlfriend or a wife. I don't know what she is. And his employers have gone after her and they've beaten her up and assaulted her. And she's in the hospital now. So now it's.
Yeah. Now it's personal.
Yeah. Now it's personal. So he, and you know, and I think what the kind of main idea of the movie is that it's impossible to be, I think there's from his acting performance, I think there's a little bit of an interesting comparison with Prometheus, where in Prometheus, he's playing a robot, an android. And in this, he's playing a human who is trying to be robotic, but ultimately finds out that's impossible. You can't be, you know, the emotion is going to come into place at some point, come into play at some point. And I read an article, I don't know where I read it, about this movie, and they were saying that they wondered if assassins like this even exist, if it's just a thing that exists in films. You know, are there actually people with lots of money hiring whoever, you know, their corporate competitors or whatever to murder them? I mean, maybe, but could somebody make a living doing this for very long before somebody would kill them, you know? So that seems
I think it goes on at the government level. Like, I think there's probably the CIA and stuff like that, but it's hard to imagine these sort of freelancers.
Yeah. But ultimately, I felt like that was the theme of the movie, was that, like, well, ultimately, we're all human, you know, and you can't be a robot, you know, no matter. And at the end, he, you know, he sort of gives in or whatever. Whether they succeeded in that, you know, I don't know.
Well, the fact that he has a personal relationship. I mean, in John Wick, they kill his dog. Right. And then it's just a revenge. The whole thing is a revenge movie.
And if this guy were this,
they like rough up his girlfriend pretty good. And he's like, no, it's personal. I'm like, wait, whoa. You have a girlfriend? Like, that's not compatible with this.
Yeah. If this guy were this robotic and this disciplined, you know, he would
this
just
is
go.
Why you don't have a girl. This is why you don't have a relationship with anybody, right?
And there's actually a scene in, it's been a few years since I saw The American, the movie that I referenced before, but there's a scene where in the beginning of that movie, George Clooney's wife or girlfriend or whatever gets killed. So then, you know, he's on his, I think it's like his last hit or whatever, and he goes to a prostitute, but he winds up falling in love with the prostitute. But that's probably what somebody like this would do. They'd be like, I can't ever have any attachments. So to, you know, to get out my sexual urges, I'm going to go to a prostitute, you know? Would this guy have a girlfriend? You know, I mean, knowing how risky all of this is.
It didn't make a ton of sense to me. And the reason why some of this stuff doesn't bother me in a movie like The American is it's more like, you know, I think the source material of that is actually a novel, like a novella in Italian.
I think so, yeah.
I think. You know, and Clooney owns a place in Italy and was spending time in Italy. And I think he thought, when we make a movie, you know, there's this book and we'll make a little movie in Italy and it'll be a lot of fun. You know, and there's all the archetypes. There's the hitman and then the people that are after the hitman and the institute that the hitman shacks up with. And it's pretty by the numbers, but I think it felt kind of fresh and charming in a, you know, in a way that Clooney was doing and probably still does for a while. And so, I mean, it's exactly, you know, you order a box of popcorn and you get a box of popcorn and you're like, well, that is precisely what I ordered, you know? And in this one, I feel like, you know, you reach your hand in and you eat the popcorn and it's like dill pickle flavor. And you're like, what the I didn't, you know, you're like, what's happening here? I don't know.
How do you, and so I think we both would agree that Fassbender is one of the best actors of this generation. I mean, I would definitely think that. And I think it's, you know, you have a character who is not in any way a good person.
Right.
So I think, you know, it's a little bit of a feat to, you know, I don't think you could put just anybody in this role to and have the audience be with it. You know what I mean? Because you have to, I mean, I don't know how you felt in terms of liking this character, but you know, you have to want him, in order to watch the whole thing, you have to want him to not be killed or be caught or whatever, you know? And I think that is a testament to how good Fassbender is. I don't know if you like him just because he's good looking, but you know,
I like him just because he's good looking. No, I think he's I think he's a terrific actor.
I didn't mean you literally, just you figuratively, but
I'll go on the record.
I mean, he's a great looking dude, you know.
I did root for Fassbender's character. It's really what he it's really what got me through the movie. I think if this was some no name or somebody I wasn't attached to, I would have turned it off.
Mm-hmm.
I don't feel like the action throughout is super compelling. I think that when he has a scene, she's in the hospital and she's all stitched up and she's like, "You would have been proud of me. I didn't tell him anything." I think she hands in a good performance. You know, I think it's just that then he goes and he goes back to his employer and then he finds who the hitman was and then he finds who the other hitman person was and it was Tilda Swinton. And then, you know, and I feel like that's supposed to feel like pulse quickening, like in The Fugitive. It's supposed to be like, dun, dun, dun. Mm-hmm. What's next? Oh, look out behind you. And his paranoia is supposed to be infectious. And I didn't feel sucked into the movie emotionally at all. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel a sense of relief at the end when he was finally sitting by the ocean. And I didn't feel a sense of danger when they were fighting. I didn't really feel anything. So it kind of hit me on two fingers, just on style. And you know, and they bothered to cast good people who know how to deliver a performance on camera. I just don't think it ran very deep. And no, I didn't find myself caring.
I mean, it's a pretty simple story. I definitely felt like this was mid-tier Fincher. You know, yeah. He was a director that I really liked a lot. His first few movies, and then he kind of hit a period. You know, I love The Game, sure, and Seven and Fight Club. And then he hit a period there where, you know, did like Benjamin Button, which I didn't really care about. And, you know, some of his other ones. And, yeah, but
you're not going to love every artist, everything.
But he, as you've said with this, pretty, even the movies that I didn't necessarily like the subject matter, they're well crafted and all of that. But this is, you know, this is well behind his top level films to me.
It feels like Netflix offered them all a pile of money, you know, and said, "Hey, we've got an association with this material and we've got, you know, we've got these folks and hey, you know, we'll spend a lot of money on it. You'll stay in 5-star." This is what it felt like.
Mm-hmm.
That it was just, it was an offer nobody could, Fassbender didn't need to make this movie, right? His career is like, oh, this is my next big move. This is just something he did for the money.
He said he did it just, I mean, I'm sure he got paid a lot, but he said he did it just to work with Fincher, that he would have done anything. You know, it wasn't, because people in the interview that I watched, they had a Q&A and people were like, "Why did you choose this role?" And he was like, "I just wanted to work with David Fincher." It's like, I would have done anything.
But that's the question. That's the question. Yeah. Why did you choose this role?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's what it feels like. You're like, okay. Of the directors that I would like break my own arm to work with, David Fincher's not one. Hey, please, David Fincher, if you're listening to this, I'm available.
who are the directors that you would break your own arm to work with?
Well, I don't know that I would actually.
Our favorite, Denis Villeneuve.
I would, I would do almost anything to work with Denis Villeneuve. Be one of his movies. Scorsese, Spielberg. The big classic one. I think James Cameron makes a hell of a movie.
Oh,
I didn't
love
The Way of Water, but there's many, many great ones. I feel like, I don't know, it's not fair for me to badmouth Fincher as a whole. I think of the really memorable movies he's made, I've admired those movies, but it does feel like it's a little all over the map. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether that's just the nature of hit or miss filmmaking, but I mean, you know, not every movie Steven Spielberg made is fantastic, and that's true of any director.
Yeah,
but
this is just a very simple, that's where I keep coming back to the 175 million, other than just, you know, they go to some exotic locations, but it's a very simple film. Yeah.
I mean, it feels like Netflix said, we'll give you $175 million to make a 2-hour movie about a hitman. You can hire anyone you want. We're going to shoot it all over the world. You guys are going to have a great time. We got this source material from this French graphic novelist, and we've got, you know, this other person who's done some, I forget the guy's name who did the script, but has done some other work. And we got a great team. What do you think? It's going to be a lot of fun. I mean, how you say no to that? You're going to be like, well, that sounds like a pretty good year of my life, you know?
Yeah. One of the things that Fincher said, and I'm sure this wasn't cheap, and, you know, we talk about CGI a lot, the bad aspects of, you know, CGI where it really stands out. And this is the aspects of CGI that you don't see. He said that in that opening in Paris, he said, what you don't realize when you try to shoot in Paris is that it was very, very difficult for them to find a place that there was, you could be in one apartment across the street and then there was a clear sight line across the street to another apartment. So he said they did that with CGI. Well, okay. I don't know the CGI costs versus sets costs, but Alfred Hitchcock did the same thing with Rear Window, you know, and that was all sets. They didn't use real apartment buildings. It was just done on sets. So maybe that's where I thought that was kind of an interesting little tidbit, but you know, who knows how much that added to the budget rather than just finding a place that you just shoot, you know?
I don't know. So. I guess it just felt to me like if somebody said, I want you to make Raiders of the Lost Ark and I'm going to give you $250 million.
And I think Raiders of the Lost Ark cost like $30 million or something, you know?
My hunch would be that it wouldn't be the film it is. Now it might have, obviously it was a different time.
Well, I mean, we know what I think, we both enjoyed this movie, but the new Indiana Jones movie cost $300 million.
But there was a lot. I mean, they went, I don't want to spoil things here, but there were a lot of big set pieces in that movie. Right. And you probably can't get Harrison Ford for less than $20 million now. Mm-hmm. So if he had a good agent, and I'm certain he does, I'm sure, I don't know what he made for that movie, but if Iron Man made $50 million, whatever, I mean, that there's the bar now. So, hell, you want me to come back and do Indiana Jones again? All right, well, so you start carving off, you know, you're not going to have to pay Waller Bridge that much money, and you're not going to, but you got to pay them. And you're going to go all of these international locations. And I think, I guess what I was going for with that is there's a kind of a lean and hungry feel to that movie. That's like, let's make it look as good as we can and as convincing as we can with the budget we've got, you know? Mm-hmm. So we're going to need some military vehicles, you know, but if you'd have given them six times the budget they needed to make that movie, I think it would have taken some of the air out of it, some of the wind out like from underneath its wings.
And with this,
it would feel like a bloated, it would feel like sort of a, you know, lazy movie.
And this is the complete opposite, where you have, as we said, one big action scene, no action essentially in the rest of the movie, basically. There's not car chases and all of that. And it's, you definitely don't feel like there's $175 million on the screen. And with, you know, not as big of actors, you could make five movies for this budget, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it just brings me back around to the script. Like, why is everybody just incessantly talking? Mm-hmm. And they just talk baloney. Like it's not philosophy they're spouting here. It's just talking about McDonald's and how it's a good protein to whatever ratio. I'm like, what are you, is this a YouTube ad for your, like, what?
Yeah.
If dialogue isn't doing anything for the movie, cut it. Why?
Well,
tell the story with pictures. They clearly got good pictures. Like, again, This looks great.
Visually, yeah.
I think I could go through and cut 80% of the words.
And the funny thing is, in that interview that I saw with them, Fincher said they went in and he was like, we wanted to take out adverbs and all this. So he said they actually went in and cut dialogue from his voiceover, you know, from what it originally was. So,
yeah. I don't know. They say you gotta kill your darlings.
I mean, this definitely feels like a movie that, and you know, I really like Fincher as a filmmaker, but, and there's something to be said with both ways of looking at things, but this definitely feels like a movie where Netflix just said, hey, you're David Fincher, here's $175 million, do whatever you want to do. And you know, that's not always...
I doubt they said, do whatever you want to do. I think they have a demo. They're like, look, we have had our algorithms chugging away. And, you know, we need to produce some content. And so, you know, we need a thriller, like a preferably a hitman thriller, the John Wick category. We need a rom-com. Etc. You know, and they're like, any of these things chime, you know, any of these five options chime for you? And I mean, they had it in better detail. They're like, we've got this property killer that's based on a French whatever, and you know, we need somebody to make that, and you know, and yeah, but they get your attention with $175 million and you're like, oh well, I'll make something for you for that, and that, you know. So it all, instead of feeling like, oh man, I've got this great idea for a movie and now I got to figure out a way to scrape up the money to make it. And I have to try and make my vision real with whatever money I can manage, which I think is what most independent filmmakers come at a film with. And you're hiring people that are just really hungry to be on screen and have an opportunity to be seen, et cetera. Et cetera, et cetera. And it gives you this, it doesn't make it a film, but yeah, it gives it attention, you know, gives it attention and not attention. It gives it a attention. And then when you're cutting it, you're ruthless with it because you want people to watch your movie. And so you want to make it as good as you possibly can. And if you're getting feedback boring in the middle, you got to try and figure out a way to cut around that. But if you've got the money up front and the hearty handshake and it's a done deal, Netflix may have even said it. It's got to be 2 hours. Like the algorithm is telling us people don't like a shorter thriller. They want to.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? What I mean in terms of Netflix saying, do whatever you want to do. I definitely think they're always trying to feed the algorithm. And in terms of do what you want to do, I think what I mean is that there wasn't really any editorial control. They didn't say like, hey, you need to do this, or we need to do this, or, you know, I don't know that with these movies, if they do any kind of focus testing with them where, you know, they show them to audiences before, you know, I don't know. I don't know if Netflix does that.
I don't know. I guess it would sort of surprise me if they didn't.
Yeah. I mean, this did play in theaters briefly.
And that's a lot of money. You don't think that the company's going to do their research? We talk about it like they throw the money around, but
yeah,
the fact that they are writing these big checks to generate their own content is where what I'm thinking of, quote unquote, throw their money. But I don't think they're cavalier with their money. I think my objection to the content that Netflix and the other streamers, specifically Netflix, generates is that it tends to have that feeling of this was based on, you know, this was sort of like Gray Man.
This was a lot better than Gray Man.
They made a movie that the algorithm told them was going to get a lot of clicks.
Yeah.
And so they tried to please this audience defined by the robot. and they spend a ton of money to get really sexy people and make them look great in these really sexy, great locations and fireworks going off, and get the best lighting people and the best camera people and the best set design people. And it, all of these things, they look like butter. You see the trailer, you go, oh man, that looks incredible. And then you watch it and you're like,
yeah,
you know, why Gray is man this was boring? Mm. You know?
Now this worked for Netflix. I read that it's already had 30 million views or something like that.
There you go. You know? So it's working for them. That's why they keep doing it.
Sure. Yeah. So
I mean, we watched it.
Yeah. You know? And it's Fassbender, you know, how much of Fassbender and Fincher played into that? I'm sure those were big aspects, and I was excited for it, you know?
But, you know, I just,
that's where we are.
Compare it to stuff that we've, well, you brought up Denis Villeneuve, and I feel like there's a real specificity that he's going for, you know, and he's trying to tell the story in, I haven't seen every film he's made, but he's trying to tell the story at multiple levels, right? So he's trying to tell the story with the way he's directing. First of all, with the way he casts his films. It never feels arbitrary to me. It's never like he's just hired. He didn't hire Timothy Chalamet because Timothy Chalamet is the hot new thing, right? Mm. He had a reason why he was thinking of that character and that role, and the ensemble in Dune he put together feels very deliberate to me. So every choice, and every set and all the color, none of it feels arbitrary. And in a movie like this, like, oh, we'll shoot in Paris because that'll be sexy. Yeah, but there's nowhere in Paris where you get across it. Oh, we'll just CGI it. You know, we'll go to Paris.
And then you
CGI. Isn't the shot we want. And then we'll CGI the Paris we want it to be. And it'll be really sexy and everybody.
And I don't think anybody would have cared if it were Munich or Manhattan or whatever, you know.
Right. And you go, why? And they go, well, you know, because we can't move everybody to shoot in Canada. It'll look great. Don't worry about it. And that's what it feels. That's a whole movie feels like that to
me. Or they could have shot in Vancouver and said it was Paris, probably.
Right. I mean, or you go and get one or two established, get some B unit in Paris with Fassbender walking around. I mean, there's nothing.
Nobody's in this movie. Like, that's not Paris. You know,
Parisians might, but films do that all the time.
They literally said
for New York, and they're like, ah, New York is very nice here.
They literally said they shot in New Orleans for Florida. You know, the whole fight scene and everything is supposed to be in Florida, and they said they shot that in New Orleans.
I see. And I'm sure that probably was be cheaper to shoot it in Florida, wouldn't it? Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
But it's like, also, why do you have to go someplace cheaper if you have $175 million budget? I don't know.
Well, New Orleans, I would think, is not cheaper, but I don't know what the... Sometimes it's like different states have different incentives for...
tax breaks and stuff, yeah.
In Netflix, I don't know any, but they might have a studio in New Orleans and not have a studio.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
There could be a lot of reasons for that, but... yeah. You get what I'm saying, though, right? Mm-hmm. Is it just feels like when you have that much money, it's like a big, sexy puff piece. And Fassbender's like, you know, hey, I was thinking of, you know, losing a ton of weight for this and like really getting down. Maybe it's in the source material. I don't know. But it's not dealt with in the movie. He keeps checking his heart rate and stuff, but he doesn't talk about that. Right? He doesn't. I didn't miss something. He didn't explain what's going on with his heart, right?
Mm-mm. No.
He just says, I need my heart rate to be down below 60 to get a clean shot or something like that. And we keep seeing his heart rate going up, which I just took to be that he's starting to have, you know, stress. Like something is cracking inside, that he's unsettled by this work in some way that we never get into in 2 hours. I'm like, can we get into it so I care? But
and that was part of the joke with the Smiths that I didn't see as a joke. It's like, oh, they said the Smiths would be a you know, band to listen to that would get your heart rate down. Okay.
The Smiths are good. I like the Smiths, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm being more negative on it than I felt when I watched it, mostly for comic effect. But I was excited because it was Fassbender, and I was concerned because it was a made for Netflix mm-hmm. movie. And I enjoyed Fassbender in it, but ultimately it's made for Netflix movie. So if mm-hmm. I would say, do I recommend it? Not really, but I'm not recommending against it. I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't have any trouble sitting through it. It was a passable couple of hours of my life. But I'm not going to go rewatch it. And I'm like, oh, dude, you have to go see, you know, it's whatever.
Yeah, I like a lot of Fassbender's, not Fassbender. I mean, I like Fassbender's movies, but I like a lot of Fincher movies quite a bit. Like I say, Seven, Fight Club, The Game, all movies that I like a lot. Other ones I like, you know, I enjoy as well. This is definitely mid-tier Fincher. And I would say you're literally the only person I've ever talked to before who knows the movie The American and has seen it. So I would say watch that movie instead. I think that's a better movie. Yeah. For Netflix movies that we've covered, this is definitely, better than The Gray Man. It's better than what's the Keanu movies, where he's the hitman guy that we were talking
John
about.
Wick.
Yeah, John Wick. It's better than, but it's a different kind of thing. You know,
John Wick is
cheesy
is
popcorn
gum.
Movies.
Yeah, they're almost comic book movies. They're comic book movies, really.
And I would not really consider this an action movie. This is meant to be a thriller.
Yeah, because he's like evading, you know, he's switching identities and he's, he has a storage place, a storage locker, and he pulls a van in there. And the storage locker is like has all these shelves all over the walls, and he goes up to one lower shelf and he pulls a box out. It's like a record collection. He's just got LPs, and they're license plates. Mm-hmm. And he sort of leafs through the license plates and pulls one out to use as a fake license plate for this job, which he disposes of later. But I'm like, what? You got 100 license plates? Like they can't just. You know, are you making your own license plates? Where do you? That'd be like if he opened up his passport drawer and instead of having 6 passports, he had 78 passports. You're like, whoa.
Yeah,
what?
And it's not
he's
like
got a whole place of this. It just was so. It felt like a graphic novel. It felt like mm-hmm. this is graphic novel material, but they're shooting it like it's The Fugitive, and it did never go together for me.
The Fugitive is definitely a much better movie than
thriller.
But one thing along the lines of that with license plates and things, and another thing that I learned from the interview, they talked about there's a scene where he goes, he needs to get into the guy's apartment, and he gets an RFI reader or RIF reader, something like that, to read the key card thing. And he just goes on Amazon and buys one, and it gets shipped to him, and then the next day or whatever.
He goes and picks it up at the Amazon Dropbox, like the next day, just throws the thing. Yeah.
They had that in the script, and it was just a made up thing that the writer came up with or whatever. And Fincher was, I don't know if he's talking to the writer, who it was that he was talking to. And he was like, is that a real thing? You know, can we do that? And whoever it was he was talking to said, if it is, you know, that's like the downfall of society. Everybody's going to do this and everything. And, you know, how terrible that would be. And it was real. And the image that they used was the actual, you know, they went on Amazon and were like, hey, I wonder if that exists. And they found it. And that was the actual one. And they're like, yep, you can get them. You know, it's a thing. People can actually. And I thought, what reason would there be for somebody to get one of those other than to do something nefarious? I don't know, but the movie, like I say, I think I liked it a little bit more than you did, but it was more interesting than, you know, I was kind of interested in just how the different, whether it was BS or not, you know, how the different things worked. And I like Fassbender a lot. And like I say, I mean, he's almost playing the David character from Prometheus.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it's mid-tier Fincher. It's well-crafted enough, and it's fine. Not yeah. like a ringing endorsement. But, you know, if you really, really like Fincher and you really, really like Fassbender, it's, it's getting good reviews, and I've seen a lot of people online talking about how much they loved it, and
yeah,
it's one of their favorite Fincher movies, which I wouldn't say that at all, but... You know, it's okay. different. It's better than Alien 3. It's better than Benjamin
Button. It's better than Alien 3. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, that's a bad movie. So have you seen anything else since we recorded last?
Rachel and I watched Lady Bird, which is
we're going to do next.
I believe was Greta Gerwig's directorial debut. And I will ask Melissa if she wants to join us again for that.
Oh, cool.
One,
yeah.
That's sort of right in her wheelhouse of, like, you know, female coming of age stories.
Had you, the two of you seen it already?
No, neither of us had okay. seen it. And the other one that she wants to watch with me is the film Brooklyn, also with Saoirse Ronan.
Okay.
About, you know, an Irish immigrant in early 20th century New York, Brooklyn, mm-hmm. based on a award-winning book that I haven't read.
Yeah.
But, you know, it looks gorgeous and heartwarming and not really our typical wheelhouse. But if you're sure. if you have any interest, watch the trailer for that. I mean, it looks like Oscar bait. It looks gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of Greta Gerwig, I think we should do Barbie at some point. I think that would be fun. Just, you know,
I have no problem with that.
White guys talking about it.
Got I think that enough buzz that I thought, you know, I bet she made a meal of that. I bet I'd get a kick out of that movie.
From what I understand, it's pretty subversive for the source material, if you
for
want
Mattel.
To call it that. You
know. Yeah, right.
For, yeah, I mean, for Mattel. So
that's the comment I heard a lot, was like, Mattel was, you know, who had to have greenlit the whole thing every step of the way.
Yeah.
You know, they
and it worked,
allowed it to
it
have
made
more
a billion dollars, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was smart of them. But, you know, I haven't seen it. And I haven't seen Oppenheimer either. And Travis wants to join us. He wants to do The Creator because he's got
all
kinds of. So you
for
can
sure.
you can stream that now, but I think you have to buy it. I think it's $20 or something
like
that.
Yeah, I
don't
want
to spend
$20,
wait.
But wait till it gets cheaper. So it'll hit like HBO Max or something like
that. Yeah, it'll come out soon. We could do The Creator. He's all gung-ho about some camera technique they used that was... not
I wanted to see that in the theater and I didn't get around to it. And it seems a little sad that it bombed.
Well, what I hear is I think that the visuals are undeniable. I think you just watch the trailer and you go, wow, that looks amazing. That it looks, the look of it is just incredible. But the criticism I've heard from a few people is the story is
kind of hollow.
Thin. It's pretty pat. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much like, go stop the, I mean, it's all right there in the trailer. Go stop the AI has a weapon. Oh, the weapon is a kid. And then he comes to care for the kid. And it turns out that it's not so black and white. And
but yeah, I'm definitely into that one. So, I mean, I want to see it for sure. And if Travis wants to join us, that would be awesome.
We should do the American. And that might be.
Yeah, let's do it sometime.
It's not a holiday movie per se, but it's the kind of movie that I would watch when I go home for the holidays. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just something about it. It's charming.
Maybe we could watch it when you're here.
Sure. Yeah. He shot it in Italy. I think he's the only non-Italian actor in it. It's all Italian actors. And
I saw it in
the American. He's the American in Italy. So, I mean, that all sort of chimes well and fits together. And,
you know, I might own that on Blu-ray. I might have bought it because I saw it in the theater and loved it and watched it at least one more time. I think I have the Blu-ray maybe.
If you have it, you know, my parents have a Blu-ray player.
They have Blu-ray. Okay. I'll check, but I'm pretty sure I bought it on Blu-ray. So yeah, that would be cool. And then we wouldn't, because I don't know if it's streaming anywhere.
It might. I mean, it might be, but better than paying for it if you already own it. Okay.
But again, nobody seemed to have seen it, so.
I don't think it made a big splash. I think it was
Clooney.
I think it was a pet project of Clooney's, but that doesn't make it a bad movie. I just don't think it made a big splash.
Yeah.
All right. So Chris and Chris Talk Movies at gmail.com is our handle. We're on the socials. You can like and subscribe, leave a comment, all the good stuff. We'd
give
like
us
to hear
a,
from you.
Also, we don't ask this often, but if you can give us a 5-star review, if you like this, if you feel like it's, you know, worthy of a 5-star review, that really helps us a lot, I think.
Okay, please do that. Not, we're not asking you to lie.
No, but don't
maybe
lie.
Just love the dulcet tones of our voice talking about how disappointed we were. And
I was just, have you checked to see where Lady Bird is streaming anywhere?
I feel like we saw it on Netflix. I feel like.
So it's definitely streaming though.
Yeah. Yeah. We just pulled it up. Let me,
I'm looking right now too.
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Okay. Awesome. Great.
And you know, it's on another, if you have a premium subscription or a Roku, it's, there's lots and lots of different Prime okay. Video premium subscription. Looks like it's
the
all
27
over the place.
Lady Bird. All right.
So that's what we'll do for next time?
Yeah. Sounds good to me.
Great. And we may have special guest Melissa Dimitris back on. I haven't invited her yet, but I'll reach out and see if she's available. And maybe we can schedule around her schedule if she's interested. And
yeah, that would be great.
It was great. I'll try and keep the app shut more next time so we can hear more from her. I did a lot of talking, which was rude. That's what I do.
You're so rude.
So, yeah, I mean, I guess that's it. Do you have anything else that you would like to add?
I don't think so. If anybody's listening, if you have any, we usually do some kind of a Christmas movie, like we did Black Christmas before, and we did Anna and the Apocalypse.
And we did
so
Die
if anybody
Hard.
Has any, we did Die Hard. Yeah. So if anybody has Christmas kind of genre, I mean, I don't think we want to do like Miracle on 34th Street or something like that, but Christmas sort of, oh, you know what? The one with David Harbour, where he's the killer Santa Claus. Did you see that one?
No.
No,
but
I
would watch that.
Yeah, that's what that, we, I thought
that
about
looked,
that.
That looked really stupid in a fun way.
That would be a fun Christmas one. Maybe we could watch that when we get together over Christmas.
Sure. I mean, we can watch it, and if it's just a real stinker not worth talking about, we don't have to ever bring it up again. We can watch it.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everything I pretty much read and heard about that, it was pretty good. So, I don't know.
I haven't, other than seeing the posters for it, I haven't heard word one. So that's, I mean, I hope it's good.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. So that's a thought. If, you know, there's a lot of Christmas movies out there, so.
There are a lot of Christmas movies out there. So, yeah. And to come on the season, baby.
Yep. It's coming fast.
All right, folks. Hey, thank you all
so
much.
Oh, I've been
for...
drinking holiday beers, by the way. I got Ellicott Brewing. I got like an assortment of, this is salted caramel cold espresso. I don't know if you can see that or not.
My goodness. But, how is it?
Yeah. It's pretty good. Not bad.
It sounds like a lot in one can.
Ale brewed salted. With specialty Nicaraguan coffee.
There you go.
It's 6.3% alcohol.
Not too shabby.
So
enjoy responsibly.
I'm home, so I'm not driving anywhere. So unless I fall down the stairs or something,
it happens.
I'll be pretty responsible.
All right. So this has been great. And Lady Bird for next time.
Yes.
Possibly with special guest Melissa Dimitris. And Chris and I will talk to you all next week.